To Hell with Dying by Alice Walker. To hell with dying, my father would say. These children want Mr. Sweet. Mr. Sweet was a diabetic and an alcoholic and a guitar player and lived down the road from us on a neglected cotton farm. My older brothers and sisters got the most benefit from Mr. Sweet, for when they were growing up, he had quite a few years ahead of him, and so was capable of being called back from the brink of death any number of times, whenever the voice of my father reached him as he lay expiring. "To hell with dying, man," my father would say, pushing the wife away from the bedside, in tears, although she knew the death was not necessarily the last one unless Mr. Sweet really wanted it to be. "These children want Mr. Sweet." And they did want him, for at a signal from Father they would come crowding around the bed and throw themselves on the covers, and whoever was the smallest at the time would kiss him all over his wrinkled brown face and tickle him so that he would laugh all down in his stomach, and his moustache, which was long and sort of straggly, would shake like Spanish moss and was also that colour. Mr. Sweet had been ambitious as a boy, wanted to be a doctor or lawyer or sailor, only to find that black men fare better if they are not. Since he could become none of these things, he turned to fishing as his only earnest career and playing the guitar as his only claim to doing anything extraordinarily well. His son, the only one that he and his wife, Miss Mary, had, was shiftless as the day is long and spent money as if he were trying to see the bottom of the mint, which Mr. Sweet would tell him was the clean brown palm of his hand. Miss Mary loved her baby, however, and worked hard to get him the little necessities of life, which turned out mostly to be women. Mr. Sweet was a tall, thinnish man with thick, kinky hair going dead white. He was dark brown, his eyes were squinty and sort of bluish, and he chewed brown mule tobacco. He was constantly on the verge of being blind drunk, for he brewed his own liquor and was not in the least a stingy sort of man, and was always very melancholy and sad, though frequently, when he was feeling good, he'd dance around the yard with us, usually keeling over just as my mother came to see what the commotion was. Toward all of us children he was very kind, and he had the grace to be shy with us, which is unusual in grown-ups. He had great respect for my mother, for she never held his drunkenness against him, and would let us play with him even when he was about to fall in the fireplace from drink. Although Mr. Sweet would sometimes lose complete or nearly complete control of his head and neck so that he would loll in his chair, his mind remained strangely acute, and his speech not too affected. His ability to be drunk and sober at the same time made him an ideal playmate, for he was as weak as we were, and we could usually best him in wrestling, all the while keeping a fairly coherent conversation going. We never felt anything of Mr. Sweet's age when we played with him. We loved his wrinkles and would draw some on our brows to be like him, and his white hair was my special treasure, and he knew it, and would never come to visit us just after he had had his hair cut off at the barber shop. Once he came to our house for something, probably to see my father about fertilizer for his crops, because, although he never paid the slightest attention to his crops, he liked to know what things would be best to use on them if he ever did. Anyhow, he had not come with his hair since he had just shaved it off at the barber shop. He wore a huge straw hat to keep off the sun and also to keep his head away from me. But as soon as I saw him, I ran up and demanded that he take me up and kiss me with his funny beard, which smelled so strongly of tobacco. Looking forward to burying my small fingers into his woolly hair, I threw away the hat, only to find that he had done something to his hair, that it was no longer there. I let out a squall which made my mother think that Mr. Sweet had finally dropped me in the well or something, and from that day I've been wary of men in hats. However, not long after, Mr. Sweet showed up with his hair grown out, and just as white and kinky and impenetrable as it ever was. Mr. Sweet used to call me his princess, and I believed it. He made me feel pretty at 5 and 6, and simply outrageously devastating at the blazing age of 8 and a half. When he came to our house with his guitar, the whole family would stop whatever they were doing to sit around him and listen to him play. He liked to play Sweet Georgia Brown. That was what he called me sometimes. And he also liked to play Caledonia and all sorts of sweet, sad, wonderful songs which he sometimes made up. It was from one of these songs that I heard that he had to marry Miss Mary when he had in fact loved somebody else, now living in Chicago or Destroy, Michigan. He was not sure that Joe Lee, her baby, was also his baby. Sometimes he would cry, and that was an indication that he was about to die again. And so we would all get prepared, for we were sure to be called upon. I was 7 the first time I remember actually participating in one of Mr. Sweet's revivals. My parents told me I had participated before. I had been the one chosen to kiss him and tickle him long before I knew the rite of Mr. Sweet's rehabilitation. He had come to our house. It was a few years after his wife's death, and was very sad, and also, typically, very drunk. He sat on the floor next to me and my older brother. The rest of the children were grown up and lived elsewhere, and began to play his guitar and cry. I held his woolly head in my arms and wished I could have been old enough to have been the woman he loved so much, and that I had not been lost years and years ago. When he was leaving, my mother said to us that we'd better sleep light that night, for we would probably have to go over to Mr. Sweet's before daylight. And we did. For soon after we had gone to bed, one of the neighbours knocked on our door and called my father and said that Mr. Sweet was sinking fast, and that if he wanted to get a word before the crossover, he'd better shake a leg and get over to Mr. Sweet's house. All the neighbours knew to come to our house if something was wrong with Mr. Sweet, but they did not know how we always managed to make him well, or at least stop him from dying, when he was so often near death. As soon as we heard the cry, we got up, my brother and I and my mother and father. We put on our clothes. We hurried out of the house and down the road, for we were always afraid that we might someday be too late, and Mr. Sweet would get tired of dallying. When we got to the house, a very poor shack really, we found the front room full of neighbours and relatives, and someone met us at the door and said that it was all very sad that old Mr. Sweet Little, for Little was his family name, although we mostly ignored it, was about to kick the bucket. My parents were advised not to take my brother and me into the death room, seeing we were so young and all, but we were so much more accustomed to the death room than he that we ignored him and dashed in without giving his warning a second thought. I was almost in tears, for these deaths upset me fearfully, and the thought of how much depended on me and my brother, who was such a ham most of the time, made me very nervous. The doctor was bending over the bed and turned back to tell us, for at least the 10th time in the history of my family, that, alas, old Mr. Sweet Little was dying, and that the children had best not see the face of implacable death. I didn't know what implacable was, but whatever it was, Mr. Sweet was not. My father pushed him rather abruptly out of the way, saying, as he always did, and very loudly, for he was saying it to Mr. Sweet, "To hell with dying, man! These children want Mr. Sweet!" which was my cue to throw myself upon the bed and kiss Mr. Sweet, where he smelled so strongly of all sorts of things, mostly liniment. I was very good at bringing him around, for as soon as I saw that he was struggling to open his eyes, I knew that he was going to be all right, and so could finish my revival short of success. As soon as his eyes were open, he would begin to smile, and that way I knew that I had surely won. Once, though, I got a tremendous scare, for he could not open his eyes, and later I learned that he had had a stroke, and that one side of his face was stiff and hard to get into motion. When he began to smile, I could tickle him in earnest, because I was sure that nothing would get in the way of his laughter, although once he began to cough so hard that he almost threw me off his stomach. But that was when I was very small, little more than a baby, and my bushy hair had gotten in his nose. When we were sure he would listen to us, we would ask him why he was in bed, and when he was coming to see us again, and could we play his guitar, which more than likely would be leaning against the bed. His eyes would get all misty, and he would sometimes cry out loud, but we never let it embarrass us, for he knew that we loved him, and that we sometimes cried too, for no reason. My parents would leave the room to just the three of us. Mr. Sweet, by that time, would be propped up in bed with a number of pillows behind his head, and with me sitting and lying on his shoulder and along his chest. Even when he had trouble breathing, he would not ask me to get down. Looking into my eyes, he would shake his white head and run a scratchy old finger all around my hairline, which was rather low down, nearly to my eyebrows, and made some people say I looked like a baby monkey. My brother was very generous in all this. He let me do all the revivaling. He had done it for years before I was born, and so was glad to be able to pass it on to someone new. What he would do while I talked to Mr. Sweet was pretend to play the guitar. In fact, pretend that he was a young version of Mr. Sweet. And it always made Mr. Sweet glad to think that someone wanted to be like him. Of course, we did not know this then. We played the thing by ear. And whatever he seemed to like, we did. We were desperately afraid that he was just going to take off one day and leave us. It did not occur to us that we were doing anything special. We had not learned that death was final when it came. We thought nothing of triumphing over it so many times, and in fact became a trifle contemptuous of people who let themselves be carried away. It did not occur to us that if our father had been dying we could not have stopped it, that Mr. Sweet was the only person over whom we had power. When Mr. Sweet was in his 80s, I was studying in the university many miles from home. I saw him whenever I went home, but he was never on the verge of dying, that I could tell, and I began to feel that my anxiety for his health and psychological well-being was unnecessary. By this time, he not only had a moustache, but a long, flowing, snow-white beard, which I loved and combed and braided for hours. He was very peaceful, fragile, gentle, and the only jarring note about him was his old steel guitar, which he still played in the old sad, sweet, down-home blues way. On Mr. Sweet's 90th birthday, I was finishing my doctorate in Massachusetts, and had been making arrangements to go home for several weeks' rest. That morning, I got a telegram telling me that Mr. Sweet was dying again, and could I please drop everything and come home? Of course I could. My dissertation could wait, and my teachers would understand when I explained to them when I got back. I ran to the phone, called the airport, and within 4 hours I was speeding along the dusty road to Mr. Sweet's. The house was more dilapidated than when I was last there, barely a shack, but it was overgrown with yellow roses which my family had planted many years ago. The air was heavy and sweet and very peaceful. I felt strange walking through the gate and up the old rickety steps. But the strangeness left me as I caught sight of the long white beard I loved so well flowing down the thin body over the familiar quilt coverlet. "Mr. Sweet!" His eyes were closed tight, and his hands, crossed over his stomach, were thin and delicate, no longer scratchy. I remembered how always before I had run and jumped up on him just anywhere. Now I knew he would not be able to support my weight. I looked around at my parents, and was surprised to see that my father and mother also looked cold, old and frail. My father, his own hair very grey, leaned over the quietly sleeping old man, who, incidentally, smelled still of wine and tobacco, and said, as he'd done so many times, "To hell with dying, man! My daughter is home to see Mr. Sweet." My brother had not been able to come, as he was in the war in Asia. I bent down and gently stroked the closed eyes, and they gradually began to open. The closed, wine-stained lips twitched a little, then parted in a warm, slightly embarrassed smile. Mr. Sweet could see me, and he recognised me, and his eyes looked very spry and twinkly for a moment. I put my head down on the pillow next to his, and we just looked at each other for a long time. Then he began to trace my peculiar hairline with a thin, smooth finger. I closed my eyes when his finger halted above my ear. He used to rejoice at the dirt in my ears when I was little. His hand stayed cupped around my cheek. When I opened my eyes, sure that I had reached him in time, his were closed. Even at 24, how could I believe that I had failed? That Mr. Sweet was really gone. He had never gone before. But when I looked at my parents, I saw that they were holding back tears. They had loved him dearly. He was like a piece of rare and delicate china which was always being saved from breaking, and which finally fell. I looked long at the old face, the wrinkled forehead, the red lips, the hands that still reached out to me. Soon I felt my father pushing something cool into my hands. It was Mr. Sweet's guitar. He had asked them months before to give it to me. He had known that even if I came next time he would not be able to respond in the old way. He did not want me to feel that my trip had been for nothing. The old guitar. I plucked the strings, hummed Sweet Georgia Brown. The magic of Mr. Sweet lingered, still in the cold steel box. Through the window I could catch the fragrant, delicate scent of tender yellow roses. The man on the high old-fashioned bed with the quilt coverlet and the flowing white beard had been my first.